This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 26, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Scott, I've had something in my craw for quite a long time. And
man, you got to wipe, man. You got to wipe.
I know, but...
I know you're a busy guy, but...
I need you to help me sort this out. And actually, you know, it was an episode of the World Poker Tour that sparked this again and brought it back to the forefront of my thoughts. And you know how we're always talking about ethics and morality and all this other crap, getting everybody all riled up on the show. I have a table etiquette question for you, and I want to know if I'm wrong, if I'm crazy. So let me run it by you.
I've met some really rude tables in my day, so.
All right, well, table etiquette from players. How's that?
Oh,
players
okay.
At the table.
Okay, all right.
You know, a while ago, I was playing in a home game, and one of the players, it was like a sit and go. It was an actual tournament. It wasn't a cash game. And there were four players left, and there was a short stack in the big blind, and it folded around. Actually, it was five players. The first player folded. The next player calls over to the short stack and says, "How much you got left?" And so the short stack, you know, counts it out and tells him. And then I started wondering, because I was like two players to the left of this player, and I wasn't in the big blind. I was a small blind. But it occurred to me that this person is looking past the person on his left, looking past me, and asking the big blind short stack what he had left. And I just thought to myself, this can't be good etiquette. This can't be right. One, because there's more than one player in the hand. Two, you're like totally ignoring, which is an insult, the other players to your left as if they don't even exist. And then three, you might be giving away info to the other players by asking that question. So, and I just wondered if this... Now, the reason why I brought it up was on the World Poker Tour, people who know who Total Leonidas is, a very, very, very good poker pro, was at the final table of the World Poker Tour event. And one guy, same situation, went past two or three other players, talked to Toto and said, "How much you got left?" First time, Toto was like, "All right, fine, I'll tell you what I got." Told him, whatever. And the guy, I think he might have even folded. Then a couple of hands later, the exact same situation. The guy says the same thing. He says, "Toto, what do you got left?" Meanwhile, he's got two or three players to his left. And Toto gets ticked off. He's like, "Why are you asking me what I got left? Why don't you ask them? Why are you picking on me? Why are you talking to me?" And I realize I've talked now for like, well, a good, you know, 5 minutes on this. But what do you think? Do you think that this is okay? And if you say no, I'll say why I think it's wrong. And if you say yes, I don't know. But really, what do you think about that situation?
Well, yeah, no, I think it's bad form.
Good.
But, you know, I guess I didn't see this clip, so I'm a little surprised that Toto actually told him, because when people ask me how much I have,
right,
I just take my hands away from my chips.
Okay.
In fact, I got a contentious argument with a guy a couple months ago, and he asked me how much I had, and I did that. I just showed him. And then it's like, "Come on, how much you got?" And I again pointed to my chips. I mean, he can count my chips if he wants.
Right.
I don't have to tell him. There's nothing in the poker rule book that says I have to tell him
right
how much I have unless they're in the pot, and then at that point the dealer can tell him.
Okay. Because to me, it just it opens up so many cans of worms. You know, okay, you get this guy to talk. That's unfair because maybe the guy to the left of the first guy is a better reader of tells or you know, people's, you know, their mannerisms when they talk or when they count out their chips or whatever. Or just the fact that they know when you ask that question, you may have had a middle pair and that's how you've done it in the past. So now you're telling these other guys basically what you had in your hand. You know what I mean? It just seems to me that it's not proper etiquette. Plus, you're totally just ignoring the people on your left. And it's just like a slap in the face to them as if they don't even exist. And I just thought, oh, my God, this guy's getting mad. And I used to get mad at this, too, so I got to bring it up.
Yep. Well, hey, you know, like I said, I agree with you. I think it's bad for him. But I don't think that there's any obligation on the player to actually do anything but just make sure his chips are in plain view. So.
All right, cool. I can't believe we agree.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you're going to be like, no, of course you can talk to the guy over there. Yeah,
that really went south there on you, didn't you?
Hey, you know, it's probably why we should talk about the show ahead of time. But, hey, you know what? Got to keep it fresh. Got to keep it random.
Well, we certainly do have some random stuff coming up here. We were at our home game on Saturday, and both our phones went off, and we had an email from a listener. you know, of course, again, Saturday was the free roll for Apes. And as people could probably tell, since we had a home game, that the Ante Up Brass and some of the other listeners decided that it was not worth trying to wade through 9,000 people for one of 10 seats. And we'll stop right now to pause and remind folks that it was just a glitch in the software. The free rolls opened way too early. And that's part of the reason that it ballooned to a ridiculous amount of 9,000. But we got this email, and you read it before I did, so I'm going to give you the honor of reading it here, slightly edited.
All right. Even though this person had a lot of vitriol, I think, maybe, venom in his words, we won't reveal his name or email address because we could have thousands and thousands of people emailing him and giving him guff. But what we're going to say is he said, I just finished around 300th. In your 9,000-person free roll.
Hey, nice day at the office,
hey,
buddy.
Man, he should be proud of that.
8,700 people you beat.
He says, no problem. However, 10 prizes in a 9,000-player contest? I rank your podcast about 5th behind Poker Beat, 2+2, Deuces Play, and Poker Road. Yay, we're number 5! Yay!
We're number 5!
Yay!
We're number 5!
And then you know, he goes on to say some other crap that, you know, whatever. But again, people, it's a free roll. Free roll. You don't have to play. You could just play in a home game like we did. And, you know, and again, Scott said it. It was a glitch, you know, that got posted too early to me and people saw it and got in on time. We're hoping that'll change this next time around.
You know, we don't want to dwell too much because we got a very nice email coming up to balance this out. But I got to say this. This is what drives me crazy about the free roll from all the arguments that we've had over the past year about this. I just don't know what people think that they should be getting.
I know. Either way.
I mean, maybe I'm misunderstanding this email, but is this gentleman really think that PokerStars should give out 900 seats? Top 10%, 900 seats to a $5 Apes event? $4,500 in seats because 9,000 people sign up? I just don't know where he thinks that makes sense in any kind of calculation.
You know, maybe we should cap the free rolls. Maybe we should cap them. 100 players. That's
don't
it.
Don't get the nation started, Chris. Come on.
Yeah, I'm not getting them started. Forget it.
Don't put any ideas in their heads about things that we cannot do. Remember, again, free roll's there. Play with it if you like. Don't like it, don't play. That's the Ante Up line on this thing.
All right.
But good. I do want to ask the nation just to kind of step back and think and be a little realistic on what's at play here. And, you know, I don't know what he was thinking. Maybe he meant they should have been given away 11 instead of 10. All right, that's cool. I don't think so. I think he wanted 9,000 seats, whatever. And it's not going
to
happen.
Here's another thing, Scott. If you want someone to do something nice for you, don't tell them you're the 5th best podcast behind these crappy ones that steal our names and have billions of dollars.
I was happy that we weren't 10th there. I mean, because Poker Road has like, what, 40 podcasts? So, I mean, we easily could have been like 49th or something.
Oh, my God. I was just happy he didn't mention Full Tilt as being better than us. but you know what? We did have a nice letter that kind of balances this out. So why don't you read that?
All right. This comes from our good friend named John. And, of course, you know, anybody that's nice to us is a good friend.
Absolutely.
And John says, just want to thank you for the free roll on Saturday. I have to say I've never competed in a tournament that large. Over 10,000? Wow, that blew my mind. Well, I considered not playing, but I had nothing else to do for the day. Hey, see, there's another reason to play.
Exactly it.
You've got nothing else going on in your life. Why does it matter? Right?
Why not just play and get some experience?
Exactly. Enjoy the free roll. So John continues, so I played and got knocked out in 24th place after just 5 hours of play.
Wow.
That was painful. Well, I hope at least that one Annie Up listener got a seat. Keep up the good work on the podcast. John, we will. We appreciate that. And you should be darn proud of that 24th, even though you have nothing at all to show for it.
Man, see, now that's what we're talking about. Just having a nice outlook on life. Nothing better to do. Want to play some poker. And hey, off by chance I happen to finish in the top 10, I get a free seat into another bigger, more important tournament. Healthy look on life there.
Well, we mentioned we were playing in the home game, and we want to mention one interesting thing. Fans of our forum at annieupmagazine.com/forum know our great moderator there, Gambit, has invented a poker game from his own little head, and he's called it Omahoogie.
Omahoogie.
And what he did is he took Omaha High and Badoogie and squished them together. Just like peanut butter and chocolate. And came up with this game, and he posted it on the forum, and there's some back and forth. But we let him call it in the home game, played it, and I got to say, well, of course, that I'm not the best judge of this, because I love all these crazy new games that people come up with. I actually really enjoyed it.
It's like the Brangelina of the poker world.
Ah, very well. Nice play.
But I did enjoy it. There was some sick strategy in this game. Especially like if you had a made hand or you had a made Badoogie, and then you had to think about if you're going to draw or not. And I suppose this is the part of the show where we should explain how to play the game, but it was sick. And I have some suggestions for some other names other than Omahoogie. You can call it Baja. You can call it Badomi. You can call it Omabad.
Oh, bad. I like that. That's
or you can good. Just call it Gambit, because he invented it, and that's kind of cool. Let's play Gambit. You know, that's kind of cool.
And but, your own name on it, right?
Yeah, exactly. But Omahoogie is the best one. Omahoogie. That's just hilarious. Sounds like noises I make when I have a head cold. Omahoogie.
Well, very quickly, the idea is you get four cards. It is a flop game, but there are two draws, one after the turn. You can draw up to two cards, correct?
Yes.
And one draw after the river where you can draw up to one card. And half the pot goes to the best Omaha high hand. The other half the pot goes to the best Badoogie.
I like how you say up to one card, as if you could draw half a card.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, I watched Survivor 2, and you know, they're very wordy on that. And I'm just channeling Jeff Probst here. Sorry.
What was your first impressions of this game, though? I mean, first you're thinking to yourself, it's kind of like Badoosie, where, you know, you just go for the Deuce 7 hand, and you just go for the Badoogie, and if you make the Badoogie, then you could try to draw the Deuce 7. You know what I mean? So there's some sort of angle.
And I think it is a little, it's got a little bit more going for it than Badoosie, in the sense that you're right. In Badoosie, we quickly realize that you really should go for one rather than not the other. And if you lock into the other one, great.
Right.
I think in this hand, this game, you really can, you can scoop. It's a little more difficult, but I don't know if one's favored over the other. And you probably have a different opinion on this, but it very well have an option of scooping here.
Yeah, it is difficult to scoop, but it is difficult to make a Badoogie, so I tended to go for the Omaha hand first, and then if I knew I had, like in one case, I had a 5 and 2 5s were on the board, so I thought, okay, well, I've got my trip 5s, that could be good enough to win, so let me just keep going for the Badoogie, and if I happen to back into a boat, I'll relax.
Yep.
But there was one hand that we have to talk about that you had, that had you and me, because I was out of the hand, so I got to like sweat your cards, and we were just in stitches. It was really quite remarkable what happened, and you should really talk about this hand. It was incredible.
All right. Well, I don't remember all my cards, but I believe I had I had an ace and another low card, I believe.
Right.
And a seven and a queen.
Yep.
So it might have been an ace, tray, seven, queen, let's say, for the sake of argument. Flop came with two sevens. Excellent. I got my trip sevens, right?
Yep.
The turn was a queen. So yep. Now I boat it up. Even better for my Omaha hand, right? You never think about getting rid of your Omaha hand. Of course, in Omaha, you can't discard. But the queen was not a good card for my Badoogie. So I sat there and thought for a minute. I'm like, all right, you know what? I think maybe my three sevens are probably good for the high. So should I get greedy and throw the queen away and try to scoop? So I finally decided, you know, hey, it's first time playing it. Why not get crazy? I threw the queen away. And what did I draw, Chris?
Another queen.
Another queen.
You could have knocked me over. When you threw away the queen, I was like, you've got half the pot locked up. Why are you throwing the queen away? And then you drew a queen. That was unbelievable.
And then getting more exciting is the river. I was frustrated at that point again now because now I had the same situation, right? Except I didn't realize, and it took me a while, and I think you realized a long time before.
Yeah, I was like, why are you taking so long to throw away that three of spades?
But that queen that I drew was a spade, so now I can throw away the three, keep the queen, and still go for a queen high Badoogie. And, of course, I did that, and it did not work. I think that was one of those hands that, you know, Gambit had, like, you know, perfect Badoogies every game, every hand in this thing, which is a remarkable in this thing, so I only got the half pot anyhow. But my sevens would have been good.
But
so.
The funny part, too, then, is you throw the three away, and you get a three.
Yeah, that's right.
But it makes a Badoogie, too, so you actually had a queen Badoogie, you threw a queen away, got a queen, threw a three away, got a three, made a Badoogie, and you almost scooped. It was just a sick, sick game, and I don't recommend playing this for high stakes, but because you're likely going to split pretty much every hand. And he did say maybe we should have a qualifier for the Badoogie hand where you have to have at least a three-card Badoogie. Because, although, you know, I mean, it's possible people will have two pairs in their hand or a pair and two suits so that they won't have a three-card. So, and that way you can scoop a little more often than not. But really a lot of fun. And that's kind of the stuff that makes, you know, the home games fun, you know, when you do mix up stuff like that. And they were two legitimate games just squished together, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It
wasn't like follow the queen.
That's true. So there's a good discussion going on at the forum. Again, it's andygetmagazine.com/forum. If you want some more information on Omahoogie, check out it there and see what you think about it. Maybe play in your home game and post your experiences. And we, you know, we mentioned the free roll for Apes, but we did not remember to mention when the actual Apes event. That is going to be this Saturday at noon Eastern. No Limit Hold'em. We're back on Saturday. Yep. For this one, so hopefully our European friends will be great. I, of course, will be in Montreal. We will see whether how much I party on Friday, whether I can get up and actually convince the wife to hang out in the hotel room on Saturday to play. But have at it. There's no Limit Hold'em. Should be a pretty big field, so enjoy that. And then the next free roll is going to be on March 3rd. That also will be no Limit Hold'em, hopefully opening only 2 hours before registration, so it's a far more manageable. Wow, how's that? Wow.
Hey, now I'm scared to move on to the Annie Up News Desk.
Tongue twister there, yep. All right. Here we go. NBC's National Heads Up Poker Championship kicks off on March 4th, running for 3 days, featuring 64 hopefuls drawn from poker's elite, Hollywood's vast celebrity, and even a couple average Joes just like us, Chris.
Yep.
The show will be broadcast on NBC on 6 Sundays in April and May.
Yeah, we saw that our local hero here, Jason Mercier, who's like player of the year for Bluff and just kicking some serious butts, going to be playing. So I'm going to be following that intently. The domain name poker.org has been sold for $1 million, setting a record for the sale of a .org domain, the Washington Post reports. The buyer, pokercompany.com, previously paid much less for blackjack.org. And has turned that domain into a moneymaker. I'm gonna just make news right here. Anyone wants to give us $1 million for AnnieUpMagazine.com, they can have it.
Wow, really?
Right there, right now, boom, right now.
Not even going to consult me.
Nope, I don't even need to.
Sell it for the paltry amount of $1 million.
I think that you'd be happy with that sale.
All right, we'll see. Well, obviously, Booker Company has a lot of money, so maybe they'd be interested in that deal. And then finally, World Poker Tour hostess Amanda Leatherman is leaving the franchise. Poker News Daily reports, becoming the new hostess of the North American Poker Tour on ESPN 2. The deuce.
You know, it just keeps happening. They don't stay very long, and I don't know if it's because she thinks the ship is going down or she just got more money from the PokerStars people or what, but, man, WPT just can't keep a hostess.
Or ESPN being a better network. It could be a lot of things. You know, here's the thing, though. We never even got a chance to interview Amanda.
I know. She, like, preempted the Annie Up curse.
Exactly. I don't think she's allowed to leave unless she had already interviewed with us.
I thought that was in the clause of their contract. Yes. All right, well, we got a new hotline clip, 813-448-1120. You call that hotline, and we answer it and use it on our show. We'll give you something cool. I really like this clip this week. This comes from Ward in Bama, and let's hear what he has to say.
Hey, guys, this is Ward from North Alabama, listening to the podcast, and I'm confused as all get out about what in the world a hero call is, because I've been playing poker, and I'm really confused all the time anyway. Thank you much. Love the show, guys. Bye.
I love this clip.
You love it.
I love it. You know, because you hear these terms thrown around all the time. You know, the first time you hear about a hero call, you think that they're putting up the bat signal in the sky and, you know, what is going on here? But really, it's just people just wanting to be a hero and make the fantastic call that, you know, you have pocket deuces or a pair of deuces. And a guy puts a big bet on the river, and it's all high cards and straight draws, and you make that call believing that, you know, you have the best hand, and you're a hero for doing it. And that's basically the gist of it.
Very good, very good. And then Ward called back a little bit later, and we're going to have to double up on swag, but I like this call just enough, so we're going to double up on the call at least.
Just wanted to call and let you know I just got back from Tunica, Mississippi, and there, sitting in the Sam's Town Poker Room was Annie Up Magazine, February 2010, your magazine, sitting in the Sam's Town Poker Room. I was so impressed. I picked up a copy and brought it home, and I'm looking it over now. It was also over at the Gold Strike. Congratulations, guys. Glad to see y'all made it to Mississippi.
That's right, Ward, buddy. If you haven't been listening to the show, we're all over the South.
Yes, we are
the
Southern Connection.
All the way north to West Virginia.
The Southern Connection.
So hopefully lots of our listeners will be finding our magazine now for free in their local card rooms. And, Ward, we appreciate both cars, calls. You know, this is why we should do the show early in the day, because at night I can't help but drink, and this is what happens.
You know what, right. Annie Up Nation, you think he's kidding. But he's not. During the show, I've already heard him open two past blue ribbons.
All right, Ward, we appreciate the calls, and we'll be happy to send you some cards.
There you go.
Texas Hold'em Strategy Cards from GreatPokerHands.com. Email your address to podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com, and we'll get that swag in the mail to you.
Well, given your penchant for talking so eloquently today, I think that I'm going to read the mailbag, if that's all right with you.
You know, that's probably a good idea, yes.
This comes from Frank Wilburn. He says, I'm sure y'all have answered this before.
It's from Amarillo, Texas.
That's why I said it like that. But when someone calls a bet on the river, the bettor should have to show his cards, correct? Not only that, but it was an all-in bet. The player in question refused to show, and when his cards were rolled over, which was a stone-cold bluff, he went on uber tilt and quit playing. Was I wrong? Keep up the good work.
Well, yeah, you were wrong if you chased this guy away and quit playing. You were going to get a lot more money off this guy.
This guy was on Uber tilt. What are you doing pissing him off?
But no, you were not wrong on the situation here.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. The situation here, you were correct, because an all-in bet must be called, especially in a tournament, to avoid collusion.
It doesn't have to be called.
I mean, it has to be shown.
Yeah, see? Guess who else is drinking tonight?
Well, I mean, the dealer has to call him and say, hey, buddy, get over here and turn over your cards. No, exactly. An all-in bet has to be turned over because of collusion. But if this was just a regular old hand and he wasn't all in and it wasn't a tournament or whatever, he doesn't have to show his cards. The etiquette is that you let him muck it because he was bluffing and you know that he bluffed and that you took down the hand. You should be happy and just show your winner. But there's nothing saying that you couldn't make him turn over his cards, but at that point, you're just going to make an enemy rather than a good call. So, you know, it just depends on the situation, but in this situation, definitely has to show his hands because he's all in, and it's a tournament or whatever. So,
excellent. All right, Frank, we love to give you a piece of swag that you can shove in this Uber Tilt guy's face. Next time he wants to play, you have him turn over the card from the deck of J Design Playing Cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Annie Up. And, you know, these cards are so beautiful, Chris, that players want to turn them over, even when they're stone cold bluff.
Even if it's an ugly hand, it's still a pretty hand with J Design.
Absolutely. So send us our address, Frank, to podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if anybody else has a question for the mailbag, that's the same address. Send it to us. We'll use it on the show. And Chris will try to give you some swag.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery. The Case of the Unseen Demon. It's a game of regulars, and we are in the second hour of a five-table, no-limit, multi-table tournament. The blinds are up about 120-240 with a 25 ante. The table has really tightened up, and it folds all the way around to the small blind who simply calls 120. I check my option into the big blind, and we see a flop.
Does it sound like we are missing something?
A flop comes 8 of clubs, 6 of diamonds, 9 of clubs, and the small blind checks. With no raising pre-flop, when it's checked to me, I bet. I bet the 240, and the small blind check calls.
I can't imagine it could be that easy.
So the turn's the 4 of diamonds, and he checks again. I read that call is pretty weak, and the 4 of diamonds is not a big card here. So I bet the pot and bet out 720. Again, he check calls.
Do we know if we wanted to be here or not?
The river's the 7 of hearts, and suddenly the small blind bets 1,500 all in. Ooh? I call for some time because, hey, I gotta look at my hand. I look down at the 8 of diamonds and the 7 of spades. Well now, do you think I should call?
I'm gonna let you start this week. Because, well, finally, I think I have an answer that is deserving of going second.
Well, yeah, I think every week you feel like you deserve to go second, so you can make fun of whatever I'm going to say. So,
well, if you want me to go first, I will. But
No, that's all right.
All right.
Happy to be the lamb led to the slaughter, as I often am. All right, here's the thing. I wish... Chris, I really wish I could take my skirt off and end my five-year-long always folding and then win a minute of mystery. But I just can't here. I just don't think this is good news for us. Check, call, shove is usually consistent with flopping a monster. Not that I'm necessarily scared of a monster per se here, but any five, any ten has his beat. With more people in the pot, I'd assume the small blind might raise on the flop to avoid the flush. But heads up. You know, you might take that chance.
Hands up.
So it's tough to put them on just a pair of nines. Just too many ways for us to lose this pot. Sorry, I'm going to fold.
Well, my answer was so many hands beat us here. And a lot of the hands that beat us actually make sense with the way it was played. 10-9, 9-8, 10-8, Jack-10, maybe even 5-5, because, you know, I think I've heard it once before. You can't make a straight without a 5 or a 10 in your hand.
That is correct.
So he could easily even have that. That might even make sense. You know, those cards aren't really too scary when you look at that board. You know, highest card on the board's a 9. You got pocket 5s. They might be good. So, really, I, too, am just going to have to grab a dress out of your closet, put it on, and fold.
And there are plenty of them in there, trust me.
I want one with a nice flower print.
Oh, excellent. Well, you're out to stand in line because everybody in the forum wants one of my dresses, too. So one of the posters did mention that we probably might have the odds to make the call here, but even he said it's still better here to fold away for a better spot. So it's unanimous in folding. So let's solve the case of the unseen demon.
Welcome back. Well, here's a situation that was marginal enough that even though I think this is a stone-cold bluff, I'm going to fold. Ironically, weeks later at my league night, I'm going to make the exact same fold with the exact same logic with a pair of kings. Although I am highly suspicious of shenanigans here, I fold face up in the hope of seeing his cards. It works as he shows ace of clubs, two of clubs for ace high and the broken club draw, and all I can do is smirk. Until next time, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, reminding you that you get bluffed more by your friends than from strangers.
Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Back with us once again is our good friend Lee Childs, who has had a pretty incredible month, 2 months or so, and we're going to get right into it. Lee, how's it going?
It's going great, guys. How are you?
It's good to have you back. You know, we're struggling with the hands of the week every week. Every once in a while, we'll get some pro, you know, I don't know, Mike Mattis. I don't know who that guy is, but every once in a while they're here. But no one can really fill your shoes, and we're missing you on the show, buddy.
Yeah, missing you guys, too. Hope to be back and do some more soon.
Why don't you tell us?
I mean, what you're going to do, Lee, is actually quit winning so much, and then you have time for us here at Little Old Annie Up. But if you're going to keep on, if you're insistent on winning all these poker tournaments, then we're just going to have a problem, buddy, all right?
All right, I understand. I'll work on that.
Well, as my partner so elegantly alluded to, why don't you tell us what's been going on in your life, man? You've been running pretty well.
Yeah, things have been pretty good. I've been, you know, since last summer, I didn't play a whole lot live. I think I went up to AC once for one tournament. Been staying home and playing a lot online and doing okay there. Had some nice runs and watching myself rise up the kind of the online rankings a little bit. Still got a ways to go to get to the top, but I'm always plugging ahead there. But last December, just a couple of months ago, I went up to AC for the circuit events, World Series circuit events at Harrah's, and played a few of the events there. And as you mentioned, had a pretty nice run and actually took down my first World Series ring, the circuit ring, in the $1,500 event just near the end of the series.
What was it? No Limit Hold'em?
Yep, but it sure was.
Man, anybody can win a circuit ring and No Limit Hold'em, man. Did you do anything at any of the stud events?
No, you know, and I don't even know if they had. I'm trying to remember if they had some stud events at that one.
Yeah, I got to interject here, Chris, because I don't think I ever told you this story, Chris. But you know, Lee, of course, is a Facebook, Twitter freak, right?
Yeah.
Which is great because you know folks like us can keep in touch with him and you know. And see how he's going. And, you know, he went up to the Southern Poker Championship last month. I was up there earlier, right?
Yeah.
And he was talking about how the nice, big, huge screen with the tournament clock is there and how well they do up there. And I had to point out that my stud tournament, I had, like, the little 13-inch black and white screen there. And then he had to make fun of me for playing stud.
Oh. Blasphemy.
What's with that, Lee?
I think it was just about the fact that you really didn't need the big screen so that all seven or eight entrants could see the clock there. You pretty much could just like have it sitting on an iPhone sitting on the table for the entire tournament field to see.
It was like one of those little black and white TVs with the rabbit ears set to UHF.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty sad.
Thin foil on it, man. It got pretty good reception. You got Doctor Who.
You know, my father used to have like this elaborate wire hooked up to the back of the TV with like the aluminum foil on the wire when he tried to pick up HBO for free back in the 70s. I was like, Dad, just pay the extra $2 a month, man.
That explains a lot about you, Chris.
Yeah, it absolutely does.
All right, Lee. Well, I got a lot of questions about this this ring, and we definitely want to congratulate you on behalf of the nation here. But first thing I got to know is when you're playing in tournaments now, when you raise, do you accidentally like knock the ring off so it rolls in the pot, and they go, oh, sorry, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to raise the circuit ring because you know I know none of you got one to call.
I haven't done that yet. That's a good idea, though. Okay. I have seen people using them for the card protectors, and but so far I haven't. And of course, wearing them. But I've played one series since then, and I did not. I did not take the ring with me.
You're modest, aren't you? Modest. Ugh.
You know, we have this month on our cover coming up in April is going to be Paul Wasika, who also won a circuit ring. He won the main event in Tunica. And one of the photos we had of him is with the ring on his index finger because it was so big. Was the ring like oversized for you two, or did it fit? Do you have to get it fixed? What's the deal with that?
Yeah, it's a pretty big ring. I mean, I can kind of wear it on my ring finger, but it's pretty big. It probably would go rolling into the pot, and then I'd feel bad for the guys when they couldn't call. So yeah, those things are huge.
Man, well, we just had Valentine's Day. You didn't give it to Jenny with like a little necklace so she could wear it around her neck?
No, she's
oh, man.
All right, so let's talk about the actual event. Obviously, you took this down. There was no deal need to be made because you had what I think was a 10-1 chip lead when it got heads up. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true.
Man, how did you amass so many chips? And did he ever approach you at all about a deal?
Yeah, kind of. Well, you know, I just amassed all the chips by just playing better than everybody, of course.
Yes, that's our point.
When we started the final table, I think we had 10 people. Their official final table is 9, but we lost one guy on the very first hand. He decided that he needed to be the third one in with his like king 4 or something like that. He was feeling a little desperate with his 10 big blinds and thought he was supposed to just go in at any point. So anyway, it was nice. We lost one real quick. We started the official final table. I had the chip lead at that point. And, you know, to be honest, I did run pretty well at the final table. I didn't have to make a lot of moves. I mean, there were a few times I'd steal from time to time. There was some smart play by other players that helped. Like, for example, I went to steal with like a 4-6 suited or something from the cutoff. The small blind who was short stack moved all in, and the big blind just called. I knew the big blind pretty well and have played with him online quite a bit, and know he's a very, very solid player. So I expected that he had a pretty big hand at this point, but, you know, realized the final table dynamics that rather than raise me out of the hand, take a shot at knocking out this player. The flop actually, I flopped a pair and a straight draw. It was like a 4-3 deuce flop. And then a 5 on the turn.
Oh, brutal.
Once Jesse... Jesse, the player who had just called, checked to me. I bet it at that point, and he folded. It turned out to be pocket 9s. The short stack that was all in had pocket 10s, and I won with my straight. So that was kind of the only time like I was even really having to. I didn't have to make a move, but I had a pretty good chip stack, and people were getting involved, and I didn't have to make a lot of different plays or try to run over the table. Just the occasional steal from time to time, but most of the time it was pretty much without resistance, unless I actually had a pretty big hand. I had one situation in the big blind. The same guy that I mentioned, Jesse, opened. A guy who I know really well, Gordon Ng, re-raises, and I look down at pocket aces. Wow. So I put in a re-raise, and for some reason, Gordon decided to go ahead and move all in after Jesse folded. Turned out Gordon had pocket jacks. And, you know, he and I have talked about this a lot since then. Like, you know, he needed to fold there. I had no reason to get involved in the hand. And it wasn't like I was playing to run over the table or anything. So there were some good situations there. And, you know, unfortunate that the hands held up. So that was a pretty big pot. And, you know, just pretty much any time that I was getting involved in any kind of big pot, it was, you know, when I had the goods, I mean, it was exactly like I like to have it in the tournaments, where if I'm, you know, I may be involved in a number of small pots, but any of the big ones, not getting involved unless I've got it. So, you know, as we went along, I knocked out several of the players. Josh Brickus, who ended up second in the event, had knocked out a couple, and then our the third place finisher also had knocked out a couple. And actually, the biggest hand, I guess, this is how we get to the big 10-to-1 chip lead. I think I had about 1.8 million. The gentleman, I'm sorry, his name's escaping me, that finished third had about 1.2, and maybe even a little bit more. And Josh was down around 350,000 to 400,000. Blinds were 10 and 20,000. Josh opened for 45,000. Small blind called, and I called with the 4-5 of diamonds. The flop came 4-4 deuce. the small blind led out for 100,000. I called, and Josh folded. Turned out to be ace queen. The turn was a 4.
Wow.
Giving me quads.
Oh, man.
He checked, and I, of course, checked. Then the river was a 9, and he led for another 100,000. I looked back at my cards.
Yep, still there.
Make sure I wasn't crazy, and they were still there. I raised it to 400,000. He pretty much instantly comes over the top all in. And I, of course, call. Turns out he had pocket 9s.
Wow.
And had rivered the second nuts. And, you know, it was very fortunate for me that he had that hand. But, you know, at the same time, he could have just called at that point. You know, it's a good lesson from that. It's one that I've talked to a lot of people about, that at that point, you know, as hard as it may seem, you have to just call once I've put in that raise on the river. You know, his play is to simply call, even though he does have the second nuts. He shouldn't be re-raising for all of his chips or for any amount without the stone cold nuts there. Because I really can't, you know, I really can't raise without a 4 on the river. And if I do choose to raise on the river without a 4, I certainly can't call if he comes back over the top all in without a 4. So there's really no value from his perspective. But luckily for me, you know, it's one of those things. It's easy to do. It's easy to, you know, kind of make that rash decision. So so I won a massive pot right there. Josh did mention to me about the deal, but he kind of was answering the question at the same time. You know, he said, you know, I'm not sure if you want to save anything here or you know, talk about it. And I asked him how much he had exactly, and we were right about 10-to-1, and so. I said, you know, we'd play it out, and if we got closer and the blinds were up, then we'd talk about it. I mean, you know, there's a lot of value to doing deals in a lot of those tournaments when your stacks are pretty close and the blinds are pretty high if there's not much play. But with the 10-to-1 lead, it really wouldn't be fair to do so, obviously.
Now, it's okay to self-promote here. We can talk about the fact that you wrote a really excellent column this month about that hand. And how the second nuts really is just the second nuts. And if anybody listening to the show wants to read that column, we now have a new feature on our site, too, where we're actually posting the content from our magazines. And that column is now at antiupmagazine.com. And you can click on the Features tab, and you'll see that all of the columns now have been listed that you've written, and they can read that. And it really gets into depth as to, you know, this guy, what did he really think you had? There's just no way he could call here, raise here. He should just call. And, of course, that's what sent you onto your ring.
Yep. No, thank you. Yeah, that's a cool new feature. You should tell all your columnists about that, and then they can promote it for you.
Self-promotion, baby. It's all about the self-promotion.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, it's just one of those things, and it happens a lot. You know, there's a lot of situations where you just have to think. What can they possibly call with here, or you know, is there any value in raising? Even when you're just dead set that you know, or you're pretty sure you have the best hand, you know, can a worse hand call you if you put in the raise? And if you think that they can, then sure, there may be some value. But a lot of times the real value, you know, and for me, I've gotten into the habit of doing that because I play online so much. If I just call, I'll get to see those cards. Even if they muck them, you can go back to the hand histories and look.
Yeah.
And you learn so much about the you know, just the betting patterns that occur over and over again, and you learn about that particular player and how they played that hand. So that's where the real value comes in most of the time, rather than making a risky raise on the river without the nuts.
True. Now, I would think most of our listeners are like, hey, 10-1 chip lead, there's not a lot of skill involved in that. And maybe there's not, but is there something to be said for getting too overconfident with that big of a chip lead heads up?
Sure. I've blown that kind of chip lead before. and you know, I'm sure a lot of people have. You know, it only takes a couple, you know, just a few hands. Yeah, I think, you know, and even the final table itself, I felt really good about the way I played. And, you know, and sure, like, you know, people were saying, oh, you just ran great. You know, who makes quads at the final table? And sure, of course, that's running good, and the fact that he made that big raise, like I'm fortunate there, but it's also, I mean, when we were actually, I didn't even mention when we had, I was in last place with about 14 people to go, and I won a massive pot with Jax, that held versus, it was a three-way pot versus ace king and 10-9 suited. And I actually made quads on that hand. And it was against the same player. He had dumped the chips at that point. And this was an all-in pre-flop, and it was also a situation where, in my opinion, he shouldn't have been in the hand because I raised, he called, a player moved all in, I moved all in over the top with my jacks, and he still made the call with ace-king. And, you know, and of course, when I saw the hand, you know, like, why are you, you know, I was almost kind of mad because I'm just, why are you calling? You know, I don't want those two overcards out there. But then when I flopped the jack and returned a jack, that everything was okay. So yeah, you know, there's a certain amount of, you know, what we would call running good, but you know, you create those situations for yourself a lot of times. You know, that in that particular tournament, I felt like throughout the whole tournament and especially the final table, I just wasn't getting involved or overly aggressive in a lot of pots. And I may get involved in some where I'm taking little small shots here and there, but just not playing big pots without some big hands. And those big pots, you know, there were some all in pots that my hands had to hold or I had to make. The other thing is making some pretty big calls based on your opponent's range and knowing what your opponent's capable of. One opponent that I knocked out, it was a blind versus blind situation, and I raised with, I believe it was a king nine suited, and he pretty quickly went all in. And I knew this particular opponent was very good. I knew that he played online a lot, and I knew that his range was literally any two cards, especially any two playable type cards. And I made the call. And he had like a 6-8 or 6-4 or something like that, where, you know, it was a, you know, the type of hand that should be live against my calling range, but one that I was ahead of. And so you have to take those chances sometimes where if you know your opponents could be making a move and shoving all their chips in pretty light, that you have to open up your calling range and make those calls with hands that are supposed to be ahead. I mean, even the final hand, it was heads up, and I had ace nine, and Josh moved all in, and you know, and I made the call. I mean, I don't like risking doubling him up, and you know, getting him up to almost 700,000 in chips with just an ace nine. You know, there's he's almost always going to be very live there. And I think he had a king eight, and the board just ran completely out, you know, no help to really either one of us. And I won the hand with an ace high, but you know, you look at the situation and heads up, you know, any ace should be good, but I've already raised and then he moves all in. So it makes it much tougher to call. You know, I really don't want to gamble with those types of hands, but you have to force yourself to make those decisions and go with your hand if it's likely above, you know, ahead of your opponent's range.
You know, but you weren't done there. You know, you went down the street and you made a really, really nice deep run at the Borgata Winter Poker Open main event. Now, before we talk about that, do you find that you run in streaks? You know, a lot of, like, I talked to our friend Sam Minatello a lot about this when he was calling the World Series for them out there a few years ago. He said, you ever notice how one guy always wins two bracelets every year? There's always somebody who wins two or three bracelets, or, you know, and it just, they're real streaky. Do you feel like that's something that happens to you too? You hear you win a ring and then boom, you really literally almost won the Borgata Open as well. Do you believe in that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that. I think a lot of it's just simply confidence. A lot of it's, you know, you've just gone through a tournament where, you know, presumably you've played well, and so you're used to playing well. You're expecting hands to hold. You're expecting, you know, you're expecting yourself to play well, and so you just do things right more often. You know, it's easier to get away from hands when you feel like you may be beat. You know, if your reads are on in one particular tournament and you're making the right laydowns and making the right calls that enable you to go far and, you know, and possibly even win a tournament like the circuit ring, you know, then you've got all of those things working for you. And it all just goes into, I think, to your, you know, your confidence and your positive attitude. So sure, that's, you know, that's something that I think you see a lot of times with people, and you see it a lot, you know, a lot of these guys that you see, you know, night after night and week after week online, you know, and even live. You know, I don't know if you guys have been following, but a guy I know named Dwight Pilgrim, who's vaulted up to third in the Player of the Year on Card Player right now.
Yeah.
He won two events at Biloxi and finished second in another, just one up at Foxwoods, and has had some other deep runs since then. I think he's had like five or six final tables this year. You know, and it's just amazing to see that kind of a run. It just seems, you know, unbelievable. But you know, and at the same time, I also, you know, I've noticed that when I've like if I've done a group training class or I've come back from a, you know, a boot camp that I've done, something like that, I typically do better when I've spent time working on curriculum and teaching other people, you know, how to do things right. Then that's just fresh in my mind, and I'm more likely to do things right more often. And you know, and when you do that, you're just going to have better results. It's you know, it's just the way it goes.
It seems like you run very well in New Jersey too.
Yeah,
it's adopted state.
Yeah, I guess it kind of is. I got deep in the 1K at Harrah's last year. I finished fourth in that one, and I've had a couple of runs at Borgata. Still, I guess I've still had the biggest one in Vegas, so I don't know if I can't really diss Nevada yet.
How much did it hurt to go out the way you did at the Borgata, considering how high you were and the chip leader and things like that?
That was pretty painful. And just so people know, you know, I went into the next to last day. This was a 5-day tournament with two starting days and then four other days of playing. $3,500 buy-in, and the next to last day when we came back with 27 players, I was second in chips, and Matt Matros, who many people would know, was the chip leader at the time. Jeff Mattson had been one of the top in chips from the start of the tournament. A lot of really solid players left in the field, but I had an average stack for the final table coming in with 27 to go. So I was feeling really good about it. I had been playing really well. I had, you know, and I think I played well pretty much the entire day. But as you know, as you guys know, it can really be just one or two mistakes in this game when you're playing No Limit that can really cost you. And I made what I considered myself to be and just like an inexcusable error. There was a big hand with pocket aces where, you know, I raised and the blind called. The flop was 5-6-9 or 5. It was a 4-6-9. He checked, I bet, and he called. And the turn was a 10. And so now with the 4-6-9-10 on the board, it had been a rainbow flop, and I think maybe a flush draw, you know, popped up on the turn. And he checked to me, and my first instinct was just to check behind. And if you think about it, this is, you know, another really important lesson. At this point in the hand, I'm either way ahead or way behind of this player. So you got to think about the value in betting. If he happened to have like a Jack 10 kind of hand, then maybe there's some value in betting because he's going to stick around. But even if he doesn't, you know, if he has that kind of a hand, then he'll pay me off on the river when he doesn't improve anymore. But if he's got a set or two pair, possibly a straight, I'm in really bad shape. Obviously, if he's got a made straight, then I'm just drawing dead.
Yeah.
If he has a set, I'm drawing to my ace. If he's got two pair, you know, I'm drawing to one of the other pairs or to hit my set. So I'm just way ahead or way behind here. And, I'm 100% convinced that the correct line here is just to check. And then when the river comes, you know, if he bets, I'm most likely calling there, depending on how much the bet is. For some reason, I bet it, and he moved all in, and I still called. And I don't even remember the exact amount. So it's one of these things that, like, I was kind of in shock of what I did, because he had 7-8. So he had called with 7-8 suited pre-flop, flopped the open ender and turned the straight. And, you know, and it's another thing for me that I was kicking myself, because my first instinct was to check, but then once I bet and he moves all in, I have to have discipline to go ahead and fold.
Yeah.
Really, no matter how much it is to call. And it was significant enough that it really hurt my stack. You know, and I did build back up my stack back to an average stack after that. I'm not sure I ever recovered mentally from it completely. And I think that was the biggest thing for me, that it was a tough one to deal with, because I was just ticked off that I had made that mistake after playing so well for a couple of days, several days. But the one big hand that hurt me was I made a call. I raised on the button with ace 10, which I know is your favorite hand, Chris.
Devil's hand.
Yes. Oh my God.
Devil's hand.
I've got the Cosenza on the button, with, you know, we have 14 players left, and the big blind just shoves all in. Actually, it might have been the small blind. And I took a long time and thought about this hand, and just, you know, it comes down again to range. And, you know, one is, do you want to risk this much? Because it would cripple me if I called and lost. But I thought he would make the play with any ace. Obviously, any ace means that my ace is better than his most of the time. And any big king, maybe even like a big suited queen or something like that. And I made the call, and he had king queen. It's right. It's the correct call as far as, you know, me being ahead. He flopped the queen and turned a flush, and, you know, and I was drawn dead there, and then crippled. But, you know, it was one of those spots where it was really tough for me, because I know it was the right call based on his range, but it's tough for me, personally to risk that much when I try to really chip up as much as I can risk free and not take those big gambles. But I think at that point of the tournament, I was completely comfortable with my call there, because, you know, if I win that hand, I'm back to one of the chip leaders, being one of the chip leaders, and really back set to make a good run at this tournament. It's, you know, it's kind of crushing to go into the day with an average stack for the final table, you know, and then go out 14th. It was a nice score of around 24,000, but, you know, first place was over 600,000. And, you know, so it's disappointing from that perspective. It's disappointing from not, you know, getting the title, but You know, and then once I saw the chip counts of everybody at the final table, and you know half of them with half the chips that I had to start that second or you know next to last day.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty painful to see, but. On the bright side, I got back home before the big snowstorm hit us, so I was not trapped in New Jersey after being in Biloxi for over a week and then in Jersey for about two. So I got to get home and get snowed in with my beautiful bride instead of being stuck up in New Jersey. my dad was there, and he's handsome and all, but, you know, I'd rather be home with Jenny.
Well, now, it's great.
At $600,000 would have bought a lot of diapers. And,
yes, sir.
not only are you running well at the poker table, you're running well in life, and you've got some exciting things going on. What's going on there? What are you doing in Florida, here, buddy?
I'm actually down here hanging out in the same state with you guys, although I'm in a different time zone.
that's right. It's a big amazing state.
So I may be like calling you for like lottery numbers or something like that and buying my tickets an hour ahead of time just to find out what happens in the future. But it's pretty exciting. My wife and I have been pursuing adoption for some time now. We were chosen by a wonderful young lady back in November. We got the call that we had been selected. We had signed up with an agency. And without going into, you know, all the details of how it works, the girls pick you and so we're matched up and she is scheduled to give birth. The due date's actually around the 23rd. She may be possibly induced on the 16th depending on how things are going, but there have been some early signs of labor. So we decided to jump in the car and head on down here and we've set up our temporary home. At a nice little extended stay place here, and could be today, could be 3 weeks from today, but we should be welcoming our new baby boy here pretty soon.
And we understand that you've already named the child Christopher Scott Child, is that right?
Of course. Of course.
You're going to call him Auntie for short, right?
Auntie.
That's right. That's good.
Well, man, congratulations on all your successes. We're real happy for you. Thanks for coming on, and we're hoping you're going to do the hand of the week like you always do.
All right, yeah, it'd be great to get back on that.
All right, let's kick that off.
All right.
All right, Lee, this is the hand I've been holding on for you. I mean, not that we play requests here at Annie Up. We're not a radio station, but a long, long time listener, Bernice Q, sent this in and was insistent that she wanted to hear what Lee Childs would say about it, so... No extra pressure here, buddy.
All right.
All right, this is from a No Limit Hold'em tournament. It's a 15K guarantee on a site not affiliated with Ante Up. And it was a $10 buy-in. 800 people are left. 279 get paid. So she says we're still ways off from the money. The big stack, the villain here, has been pushing his chips around. Sounds like Lee Childs. limping in and seeing flops, taking pots without showdowns. Our hero here has been pretty tight, but when she's had a hand, she's bet out, even into a pre-flop raiser, and haven't shown down many hands. So I wouldn't be surprised if many at the table are wondering what she's playing. Take a quick look at the chip stacks here. Our hero is about 22,000, and it looks like the big stack at the table is in the neighborhood of 71,000. A couple other short stacks at the table. All right, what level are we at here? We are at 170, 340 with 25 antes.
170, 340?
Yeah, well, you know, hey.
What kind of level is that?
These sites that aren't affiliated with Ante Up do whatever they want, you know?
Hey, there's some really cool levels at sites that are affiliated with Ante Up, too. I think it was what did I see the other day? The 1250... 2500 level. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, we're at 138,276. This is ridiculous.
All right, our hero's in the big blind. We've got three folds, one limper, two more folds. I'm sorry, three more folds. The small blind folds, and our hero looks down at 10 of diamonds, 10 of clubs. So we got one limper, and the small blind is calling.
Lee, I don't know if you've been listening to the show lately, but whenever we have somebody on who's a better poker player than I am, I haven't been saying anything, so it's all on you, buddy.
Okay, all right, so we're in the big blind. There was one limper in middle position, and the small blind limped as well?
That is correct. Everybody else has folded and is out of the way.
All right, and we have 22,000. I'm gonna want to raise here. The person that's the limper is this person that's been taking down all these pots.
Yes, that would be the gentleman with 71,000. Yes.
Okay. All right.
The villain that's been pushing us around. The all right. small blind here has just about 10,000.
Okay. So at this level with 340 of the is the big blind. Let's see. I'm gonna like normally be raising, two and a half to three times would be my normal raise. I'm gonna be raising about like 850 most of the time. I want to account for those limpers, so maybe another like 700 to account for the limpers. I'm gonna pop it up to like 1550 or 1600. I think you can. You would devalue your tens a lot in this spot with just two limpers by just limping and, you know, playing it for set value. You're letting in any two random hands. So I really want to raise and take control of this this pot, not force myself to, you know, I've obviously likely got the best hand. So I'm gonna raise to about 1600, I think.
Excellent. Chris would have gone all in, right, Chris?
Yeah, I would have shoved. But, you know, at the very least, he might get this tricky, which you're not going to, but she might get this tricky player out and have position on a small blind. But, I was thinking about 1,500, so that sounds good to me.
All right, well, our hero decides to check, and here's her line of thinking, Lee. She's pretty sure she has the best hand right now, but it's also sure if she raises that the big stack villain here will call. She didn't want to raise huge to get a fold because if he calls and she has to move in after the flopper fold, she'll lose half her stack. Now, she says she knows that Lee said part of success in the main event was never playing a pot out of position, and here I am out of position. She says, my thinking, and it very well may be flawed. I like when our listeners are honest. My thinking is that I'll see a flop. If I hit, I'll probably get paid off with a big stack, and if I don't hit, I don't have too much invested.
Yeah. And that's a really good thing. I mean, I can't stress enough about, you know, the fewer pots you play out of position, the fewer you're going to lose there. I mean, you do want to play them in position, but you also want to be the aggressor in the hands, and you want to, especially when you think you have the best hand, you know, it's just kind of a general rule. When you think your hand is best, build the pot, you know, and there are times to check behind if your hand has gotten a little bit weaker, if you're playing in position and, you know, possible straights and flushes have gotten there, things like that. Your hand may not be as strong, even though you think you're best, you're going to go ahead and try to keep control of the pot. But in this case, I really would prefer to raise. I don't want to rely on just simply hitting the flop and then hoping they hit something that will then pay me off. I like the line of thinking about this particular player because, you know, she does know that this player will likely play some big pots, but it's possible that this player is actually, you know, pretty good and they're getting involved in a lot of pots, but only playing big ones when they hit something. So, you know, if she ends up, what happens is by playing these tens out of position, if the flop comes eight or nine high, she's going to be in a real tough spot trying to figure out if her hand is good or not. And while it's true, you can being out of position at any point, you could be in that same type of dilemma if you raised and it came small cards and you still got a lot of action from this particular player. They could be playing two little suited cards or something like that where they've made two pair or a set. But at least by raising and taking control, you're going to get a little better definition out of what kind of hands these other two are limping in with. There's, you know, with the blinds and annies, it's decent enough to go ahead and win that money preflop as well. But most of the time you're going to, you know, raise preflop. If you do get called by our villain, then you're going to take it down with a continuation bet. So I just, you know, I really like to be the aggressor if I'm going to play a premium hand. Out of position there. I just think she's devaluing the tens too much by just simply checking and trying to hit and hoping that she'll get paid off if she does hit.
Okay.
Very good. All right. Well, the flop comes seven of diamonds, tray of clubs, tray of diamonds, and the small blind checks to us. Anyone
yeah,
at all?
I'm just trying to think here. I'm gonna probably go ahead and lead out. I think my hand's best. That the other option would be to check if this particular if our villain bets a lot when they're checked to. You could consider check raising, and then you're in a real difficult spot if they come back over the top, but. You got to think your hand is best at this point. Sure, they could have some kind of random three. They could have, you know, some type of flush draw. But this is why it's really hard to, you know, to play it out of position. I'm a lot more comfortable with this flop if I've raised pre-flop. But I would like to bet here. How much do we have in the pot now?
That's a good question.
We got about a little over 1,000. We got plus the Annie's there.
Yep.
I'd want to lead out for half to about 2/3 of the pot. Probably like 750, something like that. Probably about the same amount that I would have put on top of the 340 to begin with.
Gotcha. All right, so she bets out 1,020, which I'm guessing is probably around the pot.
Yep.
And the villain just calls and the small blind gets out of the way.
Okay.
Okay.
Not much to analyze there.
All right, we're still lost here.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, any pair could be calling here. Any, you know, the flush draw, obviously, any three could be calling.
Any overs? This guy's tricky.
Pocket sevens could be calling.
He's got plenty of money too.
Yeah. So, there's. It could be somebody just simply floating. It does. One thing to think about though is for them to just call right there. It could be any of those kind of hands. It seems to me it would less likely be a situation where this is just a random float because there's been no aggression pre-flop. To randomly float the big blind who could easily have a three in their hand would be really strange.
Yeah.
So I would be more inclined to think that our villain has some type of made hand or the flush draw.
All right, very well. The turn is the seven of clubs. So our board now is seven of diamonds, tray of clubs, tray of diamonds, seven of clubs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two pairs on board and two flush draws on board.
Don't like that at all.
Yeah, I'm checking.
Yeah, I'm not happy with that card at all.
That's, you know, because any seven is calling on the flop. They may not raise because they could fear that you had a three, and now they're going to be really happy if you lead out and they call. You really have no information if they've just still got their flush draw, or if they've got the seven at this point. I'm pretty much done with this hand. I hate the hand at this point, and I want to find a better spot to be putting my chips in there.
All right. Well, our hero bets out 1360 and is called.
Jeez. Okay.
All right, we'll move right onto the river.
Yeah, I mean, I think we both agree. I would have checked there too. So betting is just a mistake.
Well, I mean, you know, and it feels kind of, you know, one thing, you know, to think about is it feels kind of weak to just like check fold at this point. But because we played the tens passively pre-flop, I mean, you know, and she mentioned that she was hoping to hit the hand and hoping to get paid off, and you know, she didn't hit her hand, and so you know, she's got an overpair to this board. The person could very easily have. Any seven or any three in their hand, they may just have ace high. Maybe they were floating with the flush draw, but you really just don't know. And so it may seem kind of weak and passive to just give up because you think, oh, I've got tens, I should have the best hand. Well, that's why I wanted to raise pre-flop with the hand. But since her plan was to not do that, to go, you know, which is fine to take different approaches and do different things at different times. But, you know, with the rationale and the plan being to go ahead and limp and have that disguised monster, so to speak, and, you know, maybe hit a real disguised monster post flop, that didn't happen now. And so I think it's time to, you know, just kind of hit the, wave the white flag and you know, check fold the turn. If the player's got a seven in their hand, they're probably just checking behind anyway. So I think I would be looking to, you know, check fold the turn and check fold the river, unless, of course, it's a 10.
River!
All right, the river is the queen of spades. So our final board is seven of diamonds, tray of clubs, tray of diamonds, seven of clubs, queen of spades.
Yeah, we're done. We're absolutely done with this hand.
Absolutely done. Unequivocally done.
Unequivocally cannot call any amount of money unless it was like, well, since this site has blinds like 170, 340, maybe somebody would bet like $5 I'd call. But yeah. Other than that, I'm pretty much done.
That's what it comes down to. Like, you know, it comes down to your assessment on the river. If they bet an amount that's, you know, small enough that you think, you know, say they bet a quarter of the pot and you think that, you know, 75% of the time they actually could be bluffing here, then maybe it's worth the call. And, you know, maybe it's worth it just to find out what they've got and how they played this hand this way. But for the most part, you know, like I said, I mean, it was, you know, Chris and I are agreement done, pretty much done with it on the turn anyway.
What happened, Scott?
All right. Our hero checks, and the villain bets 27-20. Of course, you guys have already said that you're done, but our hero decides to call.
Wow.
And the villain shows down. Are there any guesses here?
A7.
6-7.
A7 and 6-7. How about 6 of clubs, 5 of diamonds?
Wow.
And our hero takes down 11,000 pot, and boom.
Wow.
So shows that you just never know who you're playing against.
So I guess I kind of win, though, because the other card was a 6 in the hand.
Yeah, that's true.
Not an ace.
You always win.
By default, yeah.
You always win.
Okay, and see, so the key here, I mean, that's really great. The key is, you know, why did she make the call? And, you know, did she think that it was, you know, some type of busted draw? You know, and that's the only thing that, you know, I didn't really say. I mean, I just that you would need to factor into some of these situations. Most of the time you're not having to do this because it's going to play pretty straightforward. But if she makes that call because she really feels the player was on a busted draw, and that's something you're going to be able to assess more, more live sometimes, because you'll just get used to that player. You know, it's one of the things that's kind of stuck out for me recently, having, you know, spent part of December and a lot of January playing more live, just how, you know, how much more you can attribute to the people themselves at the table, instead of the little icons or whatever, you know, and you know if they're more likely to make those moves. But the betting patterns here, you know, certainly suggest, you know, I would have thought maybe a flush draw missed. I'm not thinking it's the gutter ball that missed.
Yeah.
But, you know, it goes to show either way, it's possible that there's a missed draw in this spot. And if she made the call because she really thought that it was a missed draw, then I think it's great. If it's out of pure curiosity, then, you know, I'd caution against that. If it's out of, hey, it's worth it, that I think they may be bluffing enough and I want to find out what this person's playing and it's not going to hurt my stack too badly, you know, then sure, it's worth making those calls. And, you know, so I, you know, while Chris and I both said we were done with the hand, I think there's some value based on the reason for the call there. And it's just that I think most of the time when you're playing, you're going to have to go with just what's going on in the hand. And since you didn't hit the hand like you wanted to, that wasn't her plan for the hand. As she told us that she wanted to hit it big, if she was going to play against this guy, then I would have played it more passively, and I would have been out of the hand, like Chris said, and we wouldn't have won. And, you know, but then factoring in all those other things, you can see there's definitely some merit to finding out all that information about the player. And, you know, I guess I would have rather heard at the beginning that I want to play, hit it hard, or, you know, play a relatively small pot and see if I can catch him bluffing with whatever random stuff he's playing. You know, if that was part of the rationale and the plan, then I like following through with, you know, just check calling on the river, if that makes sense.
Well, it's not enough that she gets the pot and that she gets top-notch analysis from a circuit winner, but now she also gets a prize from the Ante Up Brass. It's just, man, it's like the hat trick of good fortune.
Christmas comes early. And, you know, if she plays her cards right, she might even get a middle name in the Child Childs.
Child Childs.
All right, how about the...
or just right Q. Just work Q in there somewhere. That'd be awesome.
All right. You got it.
All right, Amy, we appreciate you sending in the hand, and we will send you a $10 staking package from getastake.com. If you're out there, you want your hand analyzed by Lee or Chris or somebody even better, I don't know who that would be. Email it to at podcast@antioutmagazine.com, and we'll be sure to get it on a future show.
Lee, thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate it. We're so glad everything's going well, and keep us posted on the baby news.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Great. All right, man. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Another good show, Scott.
Yep, absolutely. Always like when we finally got Lee back on the show. I know he's been busy, and I know people have been waiting to get him back on. And so, you know, hey.
There you go.
It's worth waiting for. It's worth waiting for, right?
Good things come to those who wait. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.